Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome, everyone, to the deep dive. Today, we're looking at something really fascinating, a bridge, really, between ancient wisdom and cutting-edge science. The book is Buddha's Brain, the practical neuroscience of happiness, love, and wisdom. Okay, let's unpack this. And just to be clear, this isn't about, you know, just philosophy.
Not at all.
We're diving into how 2,500 years of Buddhist contemplative practice actually lines up almost perfectly with what modern neuroscience is discovering about our brains.
Right.
It's like getting the user manual for, well, for upgrading our own minds, but it's all grounded in the physical brain.
And that's why it's so relevant, I think.
Yeah.
The core idea here, the really empowering one, is neuroplasticity.
Ah, yes.
The big word.
Huh, yeah, but it just means your brain can physically change. It's not fixed. Its structure changes based on what you experience, what you think, where you put your attention. So it's like learning an instrument. Your brain rewires itself.
Exactly like that.
Yeah.
And the book's point is you can apply that same physical process to emotional skills. Things like kindness or calm or resilience.
Mm-hmm.
These mental states can literally become baked-in neural traits if you know how to practice them intentionally.
So lasting happiness isn't just luck.
No, it's a skill.
Yeah.
A skill you can actually install in your brain's hardware.
Yeah.
That's why this stuff matters today.
Okay, so who are the guides helping us install this new software? We need people who speak both languages, right? Mind and synapse.
Definitely.
The authors seem perfectly suited. We've got Rick Hansen, he's a PhD, a neuropsychologist, and a senior fellow at UC Berkeley's Greater Good Science Center.
Right, science grad.
And his co-author, Richard Mendius, is an MD, a neurologist. So you know the claims are backed by solid medical and scientific understanding.
But Rick Hansen, what makes his perspective so unique, I think, is that he doesn't just study this bridge between science and, let's say, spirituality. He kind of lives on it.
What do you mean?
Well, he has all those rigorous scientific credentials, absolutely. But he's also been a Buddhist meditation teacher for a long, long time.
Ah, so he's got both sides covered.
Precisely. And that dual expertise is key. It lets him take these, you know, profound spiritual goals, like developing real compassion or equanimity.
Big goals.
Huge goals. And translate them directly into concrete physiological steps.
Yeah.
He can tell you exactly what's happening in your brain circuits when you do a mindfulness exercise.
So you know why it works.
Yes. Which helps you focus your attention to really maximize that positive neural change. It's almost like spiritual engineering, if that makes sense.
I like that, spiritual engineering. Okay, so if our brain can change, what's the main problem Buddha's brain is trying to solve? Where do they start?
They start with the idea that suffering and happiness aren't random events. They're the result of specific brain activities we can actually train.
Okay.
But the big hurdle, the thing we're all up against, is what they call the brain's innate negativity bias.
The negativity bias.
Right.
Yeah, I remember this part.
It's absolutely foundational. Just think about our ancestors, you know, out on the savannah millions of years ago. Survival was everything.
Had to spot the dangers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Missing a threat, like a predator, or forgetting where the food was.
Yeah.
Well, that was fatal. So our brains evolved this bias towards noticing and remembering the bad stuff.
Which leads to that great metaphor they use.
Oh, it's perfect, isn't it?
Oh.
The brain is like Velcro for negative experiences, but Teflon for positive ones.
Yeah. Negative things just stick instantly, right?
Yeah.
That criticism someone made you chew on it for days.
Totally. It digs deep memory pathways.
Mm-hmm.
But a positive moment, like a really nice sunset or feeling proud of something small you did,
it just slides off.
It slides right off unless you consciously grab onto it and hold it there. That's the Teflon effect.
And that wiring, which was so good for survival back then.
Brilliant for dodging tigers.
Now it just causes us stress and anxiety in our, you know, relatively safe modern world. We're constantly scanning for threats that aren't really there.
We're stuck in threat mode.
So the goal of Buddha's brain is basically to give us the toolkit, the neurodharma, as they call it, to fight that bias, to build a more peaceful brain.
That's the core mission. Actively sculpt a more resilient, calm brain by counteracting that ancient negativity bias.
Okay, so if that bias is the problem, what's step one in the rewiring process, according to Hansen?
Well, the first thing is tackling the suffering we kind of add on ourselves. And this brings in a really central Buddhist idea that they map onto the brain, the two darts.
The two darts. I found this really insightful.
Me too. So the first dart is just the unavoidable pain of life. Physical aches, disappointments, losses. stuff happens.
Comes with being human.
Right. And neurologically, that first dart hits the amygdala. That's your brain's little threat detector deep inside. It fires off instantly. Alarm bells.
Okay, unavoidable pain. Got it. But then there's the second dart.
Ah, yes. The second dart is the suffering we layer on top of the pain.
How so?
It's the rumination, the why me,
yeah.
The anger, the worry, the self-criticism, feeling like this shouldn't be happening.
So if the amygdala fires the first dart, what part of the brain launches the second one?
That's largely the prefrontal cortex, the thinking, planning, judging part of the brain. It takes that initial pain signal and spins all these negative stories and judgments around it.
Ah, I see. So the goal of, say, mindfulness, from a neuroscience view, is to stop ourselves from throwing that second dart, to catch those judgments.
Exactly that. It's about seeing, okay, this initial pain is here, it's real, it's the first dart, but all this extra stuff I'm piling on, that's the second dart. That part's optional.
Optional suffering. That's a powerful idea.
If you can just create that little bit of space between the two darts, you're already winning.
Okay, so that's about managing the negative. But the book is also really big on actively building up the positive, right? Getting past that Teflon effect for good experiences.
Absolutely. It's not just damage control.
And here's where it gets really interesting, I thought. Because they take this vague idea of savoring and turn it into a specific brain-changing technique.
Yes. This is the core practice. Taking in the good. It's the method for turning those fleeting positive states into lasting neural traits.
And they have that great mnemonic for it, HEAL.
H-E-A-L. Simple steps, but the intention behind them is everything. First, have a positive experience. And it really can be small.
Like what?
The warmth of your coffee cup, the sun on your face, feeling relieved you finished an email.
Yeah.
Anything positive. Just notice it.
Okay, notice it. Then E.
Enrich it. And this is critical. You stay with that positive feeling for, say, 10, 20, even 30 seconds.
Why that long?
Because that duration allows the experience to move from fleeting awareness into actual short-term memory. It starts the process of consolidating it, building the neural structure. You let the feeling fill your mind and body.
Okay, have, enrich, then A.
Absorb it. You consciously intend for that good feeling to sink into you. Like, really visualize it becoming part of you, a resource you can draw on later.
Sinking in. And the L, you said that was optional.
Yeah, link positive and negative material. This is a more advanced step where you consciously bring up the feeling of that absorbed positive experience while holding a difficult feeling or memory gently in awareness. The positive can start to soothe or recontextualize the negative.
Wow. So that simple heal process done regularly.
Yeah.
That's how you counteract the Teflon and build resilience.
That's the engine for wiring in the good stuff. You're literally building up a reserve of positive neural pathways.
Okay, so we're installing the good. What about managing the stress response? The, you know, fight or flight thing.
Right, the brain regulation piece.
Yeah.
This involves understanding the two branches of our autonomic nervous system. You've got the sympathetic system, that's the gas pedal, fight or flight.
Full alert.
And the parasympathetic system, that's the brake pedal. Rest and digest, calm and connected.
And most of us spend too much time with the gas pedal floored.
Way too much. Modern life keeps it pressed down. But the book shows us we can consciously hit the brakes through the breath. Specifically, slow, deep breathing, where you focus on making the exhalation longer than the inhalation.
The exhale is key.
The long, slow exhale is key. It stimulates the vagus nerve, a major nerve running through your body, which sends a signal straight back to your brainstem and amygdala saying, essentially, the emergency is over, stand down.
So it's a direct physical signal to your brain. Everything is okay now.
Precisely. It's physiology, not just wishful thinking. If you want to cool down your stress response, slow your breathing, extend the exhale.
That's incredibly practical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, moving towards wisdom, the book looks at how the brain constructs our sense of self. This involves something called the default mode network, or DMN.
The DMN. I've heard of this. That's the part of the brain that's active when our mind is wandering.
Exactly. When you're not focused on a specific task, the DMN kicks in. It's the network behind that constant inner chatter. The planning, worrying, replaying conversations, comparing yourself to others.
Yeah.
The me, myself, and I show.
Our mental autopilot, always running in the background.
Pretty much. And here's the link to wisdom. Advanced contemplative practices, especially deep meditation, have been shown to quiet down the DMN.
They turn down the volume on the inner chatter.
They do. And quieting that network leads to this profound insight, really, that the self we're always worrying about and defending,
mm-hmm.
it isn't some solid, permanent thing.
It's not a fixed entity.
Neurologically, it looks much more like a fluid process, a constantly changing construction, not a noun, more like a verb.
Wow, and seeing that, that's liberating.
Hugely liberating, because if the self isn't this fixed, fragile thing, there's less to defend, less to feel threatened about, less fuel for that second dart of suffering we talked about. It reduces that self-centered clinging.
That's a big shift in perspective. Okay, so wrapping up the core concepts, if we look at the key messages, the absolute number one has to be
neuroplasticity. It's your superpower.
Right. Every single mental action, every time you consciously choose where to put your attention, it's like doing a rep at the mental gym.
You got it. Neurons that fire together wire together. That's the rule. We are actively sculpting our own brains, our own inner world, with every thought, every feeling we cultivate.
That's empowering. And the other big theme for me was the integration of body and mind. They really emphasize this.
Yes, embodiment.
Yeah.
Thoughts and emotions aren't just happening in your head. They are deeply tied to your physical state. And this brings in interoception.
Interoception? That's awareness of your internal body signal.
Exactly. It sounds technical, but it just means your brain's ability to sense what's going on inside the tension in your shoulders, that knot in your stomach, your heartbeat. Paying attention to that physical feedback.
So it's not just a vague gut feeling, it's real data.
Absolutely real data.
Yeah.
And the book explains that enhancing this sensitivity, which involves a brain region called the insula, lets you catch feelings like anxiety or irritation much earlier.
Before they snowball into big thoughts.
Right. You feel the physical precursor. So calming your body with the breath or just awareness isn't just about relaxing, it's a direct physical way to regulate your mind.
Body informs mind. Mind informs body. It's a loop.
A constant loop. And finally, the structure of the book itself sends a message. Happiness, love, and wisdom aren't separate tracks.
They're interconnected.
Deeply. They reinforce each other.
Hmm.
Being happier gives you the inner resources to be more loving. Being more loving and connected quiets that self-focused DMN chatter, which opens the door to wisdom. It all works together.
That makes sense. The book is also full of really memorable lines, isn't it? Little nuggets that stick with you.
Oh, definitely. Very actionable ideas condensed into great quotes.
I think we absolutely have to start with the one that just nails the core problem. The brain is like Velcro for negative experiences and Teflon for positive ones.
That's the essential diagnosis. And hearing it is so validating, isn't it?
Yeah, it makes you feel less like, what's wrong with me that I worry so much?
Exactly. It's not a personal failing. It's our evolutionary inheritance. It normalizes the struggle and shows why we need to be intentional about cultivating the good.
Okay, and then the flip side, the quote that gives us the power back, you can use your mind to change your brain to change your mind.
That one captures the whole positive feedback loop of neuroplasticity. It emphasizes our agency. Mind changes brain, which then changes mind. We're not just stuck with the brain we have.
We're in the driver's seat.
We can be, yes. We are the active agents, the editors of our own neural script.
Love that. Okay, let's make this super concrete. Real life applications. How can someone listening right now use this stuff like today?
Well, take stress management. You're in a tense meeting or maybe you're about to have a difficult conversation.
Yeah, that feeling when your chest tightens up.
Right. In that moment, you can consciously use the breathing technique. Just focus on making your out breath a little longer than your in breath. Nobody even needs to know you're doing it.
A stealth technique.
Totally stealth.
Yeah.
But you're physically activating your parasympathetic nervous system, hitting the brakes on that stress response in real time. It works.
Okay, what about in relationships? Or maybe parenting?
Huge applications there. For relationships, think about conscious empathy. The book talks about strengthening your mirror neurons, the circuits that help you sense what others are feeling.
So instead of reacting defensively,
you pause and try to genuinely feel into the other person's experience what might be going on for them, even in their body. It diffuses conflict because you shift from attack-defend to trying to understand.
And for yourself, like dealing with that inner critic.
That's where heal is the absolute go-to, taking in the good. Every time you dismiss a small success or overlook a moment of feeling capable or kind,
you miss a chance to rewire.
You miss a chance. So you deliberately practice heal. You have the experience. Enrich it for 10, 20 seconds, absorb it. You are systematically building that inner reservoir of worth and resilience, literally installing the neural hardware to counter negative self-talk.
It's like building an inner refuge brick by brick.
That's a great way to put it.
Okay, so wrapping this all up, what does this all mean? For me, the most surprising and honestly encouraging thing was how much change can come from these small, simple, consistent practices.
Right. It's not about needing some massive life overhaul.
No. It's about weaving things like the HEAL method or mindful breathing into the moments you already have. Savoring that cup of coffee with real intention for 20 seconds. It adds up.
It really does compound over time. And maybe the final thought, the provocative idea to leave people with, is this. Your mind isn't some abstract ghost in the machine.
It's physical.
It's a physical process, constantly leaving traces in the structure of your brain. And the amazing thing is you now have a scientifically validated roadmap tools like HEAL, like conscious breathing, to direct that process.
You can build a better brain.
You can literally build a better brain. One intentional thought, one mindful breath, one absorbed good moment at a time. Realizing you have that power, that you are the architect of your own well-being.
Yeah.
That's the paradigm shift. That's the real takeaway from this deep dive.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.